can Buddhism be separated from Eastern culture? Not only can it be separated, it must be separated. At least it must be distinguished. Buddhism is not Eastern culture, however beautiful Eastern culture may be. Buddhism is not culture at all. The Dharma is not culture. The golden light is not culture. Culture is only the medium. Unfortunately, many Eastern Buddhists, including those who come to the West hoping to teach, do not understand this. And sometimes they think that they are preaching the Dharma when they're only propagating their own national culture. And this causes great confusion in the minds of at least some Western Buddhists. Is acquaintance with Eastern culture necessary to an understanding of Buddhism? Yes and no. Historically, Buddhism has found expression in terms of Eastern culture. If we want to approach the Dharma, we therefore have to have some acquaintance with Eastern culture, at least initially. For instance, we are studying the Sutra of Golden Light. Here, the Dharma is expressed very much in terms of Indian culture. And without some understanding of Indian culture, the message of the Sutra remains more or less inaccessible. But acquaintance with Eastern culture can be dispensed with if one is in personal contact with a spiritual teacher. With that is to say, a spiritual teacher who does not have to rely on Eastern culture as medium of communication. Does a Western Buddhist have to adopt Eastern culture? Well, not in the West. Not in principle, that is. Until Western Buddhist cultural equivalents have emerged, we shall have to use or adapt some elements of Eastern Buddhist culture. For instance, in such matters as robes, style of chanting, iconography. In the East, however, it's probably best for the Western Buddhist to conform completely to the local Buddhist culture. Of course, he must be careful not to mistake that culture for the Dharma. However, it's becoming less and less necessary for the Western Buddhist to go East at all. Now, we do have everything that we need at home, at least here in Great Britain. How can Western culture place itself at the service of Buddhism? This is quite a complex question. I'm going to say just one thing. Western Buddhists can at least make a start by establishing points of contact. That is to say, points of contact with those great Western creative figures, great Western writers, who at least at times, at least to a limited extent, have made some approach to the Dharma. I'm thinking of such people as Goethe, Schopenhauer, Nietzsche, Blake, Wordsworth, even D.H. Lawrence. What is Western culture? I'm sorry to say I must balk this one altogether. It's much too big a question to be disposed of towards the tail end of a lecture. I'm afraid I have to fall back on my usual promise of a future discussion. Will a Western Buddhist culture ever be developed? Well, I certainly hope so. In fact, a small beginning has already been made, is being made within the FWBO. But as yet, it's so small that I'm not going to say anything about it. I'll just leave it to develop in peace. Can the Dharma be taught without the medium of culture? Yes, it can, but only within the context of a close and intense spiritual relationship between teacher and disciple. Now, this whole question of Buddhism and culture is a very important one. Culture occupies a very important place in our lives, a very important place even in our spiritual development. When speaking at the beginning of the lecture, about the Saraswati Puja in India, which I've either just had or just going to have, I couldn't help wishing that we could have in this country a Saraswati Puja, as it were, of our own. That is to say, a puja, a celebration, a festivity that would symbolize for us the integration of cultural activity into spiritual life. And how wonderful it would be if we could have such a puja, such a Saraswati puja. Or better still, how wonderful it would be if we could have a Manjugosha puja. Saraswati, after all, represents more the ethnic culture. She represents Indian culture, but Manjugosha is more universal. Manjugosha is found all over the Mahayana Buddhist world. He was very popular in China, very popular in Tibet, and he could perhaps well come west. Manjugosha represents, we may say, Manjugosha symbolizes the profoundest wisdom, transcendental wisdom, expressed in terms of the most highly developed, the most refined culture. And as most of you know, he's usually depicted in Bodhisattva form, depicted as a beautiful young prince, golden yellow in color. And he sits cross-legged on a blue lotus throne. He wears a crown, a headdress of 5 full-blown blue lotus flowers. In his right hand, which is raised aloft, he wields a flaming sword, the sword of wisdom. And in his left hand is a book, which he holds against his heart. His expression is compassionate and smiling, and the whole figure radiates brilliant, golden light. In popular tantric Buddhism, an effort was made to regard Saraswati as the consort of Manjugosha. We may say that the Tantra had, or at least certain branches of the Tantra had, at times, a sort even of mania for finding consorts for everybody, even for the Buddha. But Manjugosha remains eternally without a consort, remains single, remains celibate, remains perfect. So there's no need to have a personification, a separate personification of culture, as a separate personality, a separate being beside him. Culture in the person of Manjugosha has been fully assimilated. Culture has been fully absorbed. Culture is, if you like, the ornaments that sparkle on the golden body of Manjugosha. Ultimately, the golden light transcends culture.